I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome to Radio Times. Sharon Saleen is a clinical psychologist and has worked for years treating kids diagnosed with ADHD and their families. She includes stories, anecdotes, and observations by these young people in her book, What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew. Amari, age 17, says, having ADHD is like you're trying to pedal uphill on a bike, but it's not in a gear, so you're going backwards. You're trying, but it's not going. Martina, age 17, explains, there are bubbles of big things inside of me. Sometimes they radiate out, and sometimes they explode. Carter, age 11, says, I lose my temper. I get seriously angry. I throw stuff. I run around screaming. ADHD makes the basic daily tasks of life a struggle, things that can seem so mundane to others, like paying attention in school, getting homework done, remembering to take out the trash, being organized, being on time. Having a child with ADHD is frustrating for parents to watch them struggle in school and need constant reminders to clean up their room, to set the table, do their homework. So today on Radio Times, how to parent a child with ADHD. And Sharon Saleen joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's wonderful to be here, Marty. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. You begin by talking very briefly about having a brother who was diagnosed with, or was described certainly as hyperactive and impulsive. So you have a very personal connection to this notion of ADHD kids. What was it like growing up with him?
Well, it was a complicated family I grew up in. I love my parents dearly and my brother, but there was a lot of intensity, intense emotions, explosions at times, behavioral difficulties. I mean, my brother struggled, and I watched it all happen, and I wasn't always the best sister, to be perfectly honest. I don't think I came to his rescue or support as much as I could have. I think I stepped back and was trying to stay out of the fray.
Sort of watching from the sidelines?
Yes, watching a little bit from the sidelines, and probably for me, I was overwhelmed a little bit by what I was seeing, and I didn't know, you know, how to step in. You know, when that we have a famous family story that he, you know, had some tantrums because his socks wouldn't stay up, and that's very common actually. Now we know that kids with ADHD also have a lot of sensory integration issues, and but at the time, it was just a sort of a power dynamic between my parent, my dad and my mom and my brother, like just pull up your socks kind of thing. Today, I think, you know, he has a lot more insight, and we all do. And, you know, he's someone who has been incredibly successful in the business world, really found out about his own ADHD once his son, my nephew, was diagnosed.
And, oh, interesting.
You know, and I think we've all sort of adapted to understanding ADHD more, mostly because my nephew, and wanting to support him.
Help us understand about the ADHD brain, and this is something that we're learning more and more about. Is there something uniquely different about the brain of someone diagnosed with ADHD?
That's a wonderful question, Marty. Yes, actually, there is. So the brain develops from the back to the front and the inside out. It has a right and a left hemisphere, as we know, that's connected by what I call superhighway, the corpus callosum. And the corpus callosum deals with the integration of details and planning and sequences. And it's been found through various brain imaging tests to be smaller in ADHD folks. In addition, people who have ADHD produce or live with less dopamine or norepinephrine in their brains. And dopamine and norepinephrine are neurotransmitters, which are really important. And the pathways that they run along have to do with different things. The pathways that dopamine runs along in the brain have to do with reward and satisfaction and initiation and pleasure and sex. And the pathway that norepinephrine serves has to do with sleep and alertness and concentration. And so in people who have ADHD, what happens is that those neurotransmitters at the synapses, because neurotransmitters are like ferries, they take the electrical impulse from one neuron to the next. That's how the messages get travel around our brain. And there's less dopamine or norepinephrine, or what's there moves very slowly. Hmm. And so that's why we call it a biologically based disorder.
I've seen several descriptions. One, a race car brain with bicycle brakes.
That's which Dr. Hallowell.
Very well known in this field.
Yes.
But does it explain the kind of novelty seeking? And that seems to be also a character trait or a trait of someone with ADHD, which is this seeking of input.
Right. Well, that seeking of input has to do with that dopamine pathway, because dopamine is about reward, satisfaction, engagement. And for people with ADHD, they are always trying to find that stimulation, what keeps them interested and engaged. And the final thing has to do with executive functioning skills. So I said the brain develops from the back to the front, and the back of the brain is frequently called the reptilian brain. It's with breathing and heart rate. It's what we share with reptiles. Then the center of the brain is called the mammalian brain, also known as the feeling brain. And then the very front of the brain, behind your forehead, is called the human brain, which is the thinking brain. And that's the seat, really, of cognition. And all of our executive functioning skills reside there. And what happens is that those skills and the pathways of dopamine, they're one and the same. And so when people have deficiencies in dopamine, the executive functioning skills are affected. And that is why everybody with ADHD has executive functioning skill deficits. And those of us who don't have ADHD also may have some, but not to the level of intensity and breadth that people with ADHD do.
I'm curious about when this shows up, and it clearly shows up when children go to school. Is there something about school that just becomes this marker for a child with ADHD?
School uses all of our executive functioning skills. I mean, if you think about it, there are executive functioning skills that have to do with thinking and executive functioning skills that have to do with behavior. And school uses all of them. And so when young children go to school, it takes them a lot of effort, all kids, to sit,
right,
to concentrate, to produce work. And for kids with ADHD, the brain matures a little more slowly, up to 3 years. There's a lag of 3 years in maturity in the connectivity of the pathways around dopamine and norepinephrine. And so they are often struggling more than your typical student to attend to the work, to keep their hands and words to themselves, their feelings. Dr. Russell Barkley says ADHD is a disorder of dysregulation, self-regulation. And that's what you start to see when you go to school. You have to control yourself. And you're compared to peers immediately who may have an easier time of it. And that's why we tend to see it most early in school.
Is it often described as immaturity? This is a child that can't sit still, for instance. And do we see it more commonly in boys than girls?
Yes, actually. 11% of children in the United States are diagnosed with ADHD, and the ratio of male to female is 2 to 1.
Wow.
Which is also hyperactivity, impulsivity to inattentive type. As kids age, they usually shift from hyperactivity, impulsivity to inattentive ADHD, and some people have both.
I wonder whether it's both underdiagnosed and overdiagnosed. And you talk about it's important to have a correct diagnosis, whether it's a pediatrician or a psychologist or psychiatrist or a school counselor. But I wonder whether, on the one hand, there are children diagnosed with ADHD who should not be diagnosed, and whether there are kids that really should be diagnosed, but no one has done the job.
That's a really great question. I don't know if you saw the article in the New York Times recently about how children who were born in August seem to be there are higher rates those kids who are being diagnosed with ADHD. So I think immaturity has something to do with it. For me, I feel like the issue is getting a proper diagnosis, and that's an evaluation that has a breadth to it, that has interviews with family members, that has plenty of pencil and paper forms you're going to fill out, that includes psychological testing, and perhaps, you know, a parent knowing themselves that they are like this and recognizing it. I think that in a lot of parts of the country, people go to physicians and on the referral of their teacher and say, you know, they think my child has ADHD.
Right.
You fill out a Vanderbilt form, you come back, you get diagnosed. And that really sells everybody short because the symptoms of ADHD can look like trauma, depression, and anxiety. And so we have to do a differential diagnosis and be really clear of what we're deciding here.
You've worked with a lot of kids. What does being diagnosed with ADHD, what does that mean to them?
That is such a hard question to answer because it varies, of course. But initially, you know, there's someone in my book, I quote this person, and he says, no one wants to have a disorder. And I don't like the word disability either, because to me, disability means inability. And I have abilities for things. So I think it's very difficult to say to a child, you have a disorder.
Right.
What I prefer to do is to ask the child, what kind of brain do you have? And you'll be surprised. I have a fast brain. I have a foggy brain. I have a dreamy brain. That's the label I want to work with, because that's near to their experience. And when it's near to their experience, it's not so pejorative. Having a disorder, feeling like there's something wrong, most kids equate that with being bad. And we want kids, all kids, to grow up feeling good about themselves.
What does it often mean? You work with parents as well. When they find out their child is diagnosed with ADHD, I'm assuming a range of responses as well.
Of course. Of course. Some parents are relieved. I'm working with a family right now, and they feel a sense of relief because it's something that they knew. Something wasn't right. They've been dealing with this for a year. Their son is in sixth grade, and they're worried. He's been depressed. For them, this gives them a map. And now, together, we're going to plot out their journey, what we're going to work on in terms of building those skills and whether they want to consider medication. Some parents deny it. I don't believe in ADHD. That's fine. We can work on behaviors, but I'm not going to medicate my child. And that is their choice. You know, the research shows that the best outcome for kids with ADHD is a combination of medication and cognitive behavioral therapy, which is essentially done in family work.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with clinical psychologist Sharon Saleen. She's got a new book called What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew, Working Together to Empower Kids for Success in School and Life. And you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at @WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation. We'll be talking more about what parents can do after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and if you're just joining us, Sharon Saleen is our guest. She's a clinical psychologist, and we are talking about some of the work that she has done with children and their families, children diagnosed with ADHD. Her book is What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew. It's, you know, all parents have expectations of their children. They want, you know, they want them to have a good life. They don't want them to struggle. They want them to be a success, hopefully do better than what they do. Do parents with children diagnosed with ADHD have to deal with the kind of disappointment of realizing this is not the child I thought I was going to get?
Of course. But you have an amazing child in front of you. And so when I was talking with kids, I asked kids, you know, what do you wish your parents knew?
Right.
And I came up with five themes from these dozens of interviews. And the first theme was self-control. Manage yourself before you deal with me, because if you're upset and I'm upset, it's like throwing kindling on the fire. And then things get worse.
And I should just underscore, this is what the children are telling you essentially
about their
parents.
This is what the children are telling me about their parents. Right, like when my parents get really upset, I don't like that. It's very hard for me. I'm already upset and now they're upset. And, you know, it's basically kind of a disaster.
So mom and dad, yourself together.
Get yourself together. And then in my book, I talk about how to do that. The second C, which is related to your question, is compassion. And what kids said is, I want my parents to accept me for who I am, not who they think I should be in 10 years, or who they don't see. I want them to meet me where I am and understand that I'm doing the best I can with the resources I have available to me right now and that I can access. I mean, they don't use those words, of course, but I'm doing the best I can and things are tough for me. You know, it's not, I'm struggling and I'm succeeding, but please pay attention to the fact that I want to do well. I just can't always harness everything to make that happen.
Let me just pick up on that. I'm putting myself in the role of a parent, and I am one. So your child doesn't do their homework, and you say, why don't you do your homework? I mean,
The
child says, well, I'm doing the best that I can.
It's not quite like that. I think it's more of an emotional thing, like walking a day in my shoes sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. For kids with ADHD, they hear negative comments about themselves from early on, Marty. And, you know, do this, do that, don't do this, stop talking. I mean, it's just constant. And what happens with these kids is all of those negative comments become internalized into a negative conversation about themselves. And of course, that has an effect on their self-esteem and their self-confidence, and they're willing to take risks, try things, and be disappointed because they feel like they're a perpetual disappointment. So we have to really be careful about, you know, pushing children. I like to tell parents, focus on the present and the next present,
because as opposed to the
future, right?
The future
how many clients have I seen whose child is struggling in third grade and they're worried they're never going to go to a good college? And what I want to say to you is, you have so many years between now and then. Could we just focus on this week and maybe next week? You know, that would be helpful. Let's focus on that.
You also talk about collaboration. I mean, the idea of, and I guess it's so easy to get to loggerheads rather than thinking about, well, what is the thing that we can come together on?
Right. That's the third C. What kids said is, include me in the plans you're making that are supposed to help me, because I actually have some ideas about how my brain works. Perhaps I want my folders, my work in folders that have names. Perhaps I like colors. English is red. Math is blue. You know, help use what feels natural to me. And that's only going to happen with collaboration. And part of collaboration is incentivizing and using incentives that matter to your kids.
Consistency is another one of the C's. And this, of course, is hard for all parents, just parents
for
of
everyone.
Kids with ADHD.
Exactly. But they don't. Kids with ADHD don't expect their parents to be perfect, and they don't expect their parents to do the same thing all the time. What they do really want is their parents to try as best they can to do what they say they're going to do. If you have a middle school daughter and her room is a mess and you say, I'm never cleaning your room again, and 2 weeks go by and you open the door and it's just disgusting, and you clean it when she's in school, she's going to come home and she's now upset about two things. One, you've cleaned her room without her permission. Mm-hmm. And two, you've done something that you said you weren't going to do. So how many other ways can she get you to shift if you say you're going to do something and you won't? And the other part of consistency is really about what I call efforting, trying. As I said, these kids want to do well if they can, and they're trying. They may be making efforts that are nonsensical or ill-fated, but they're trying. And what they want to have noticed from adults is that they're seen in those efforts to try.
You're talking about empathy.
Yes. But also, I think there was something about being seen in trying. that they're making progress. You know, I like to say practice makes progress. And for kids, they'd like to focus a little more on the progress they're making and a little less on achieving the goal.
The progress along the way.
Right. There's a lot of focus on you do this goal rather than how small changes that you're making. And the small changes will eventually result in that goal. And if you pay attention to them and you give some positive feedback about them, you're more likely to get the goal in the first place.
Celebration is the last one. Yeah. Celebrating the good stuff, right?
I mean, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, in her book Positivity, says the positive ratio is 3-1. And many people I talk to, I've been on a book tour this fall, I've asked everywhere I go, what do you think it is for your child? And I get answers anywhere from 1 to 15 to 1 to 75.
Wow.
So, you know, we want to give kids positive feedback. We want to counter that negative conversation that they have. This doesn't mean you bake a cake because your son got to school on time, but a high five, a way to go, thanks for clearing a plate, just noticing. I know these are things kids are supposed to do anyway, but that extra noticing helps them along the way.
Let me read some comments here. We got a lot of people that want to join us as well. A Facebook comment from Abby. What are some of the differences one sees in terms of how ADD or ADHD presents in boys versus girls? And is there a difference?
Yes, there is a difference. What we often see early on is that boys tend to be more hyperactive and impulsive, and that girls are more inattentive. And what that looks like is that girls are sort of spacing out, a little dreamier, having more trouble focusing. It's quieter. With boys, it tends to be more outgoing, out in the open, they are affecting other people more directly.
And is that just because that's boys being boys? Is there something different about their brains, or do we know?
I think it's more about the culture of being male, and that girls, you know, we girls and women are, we tend to internalize things. But I see that less than I used to. I actually see more hyperactivity in girls, but for the most part, it's the 2-1.
Let me just reintroduce you briefly here. That's Sharon Saleen. She's a clinical psychologist and has devoted her career really to working with kids with ADHD and their families. And she's written a new book called What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew. And she was just talking about what her patients have told her about what they want their parents to do in dealing with them. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Linda from Princeton to join our conversation. And Linda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I wanted to call because 2 years ago, both my son and I, my son is 16, were diagnosed with ADHD. He had been in a Montessori program for all of grammar school and then hit high school and hit a wall with homework. So we had spoken to some of his teachers and then went and saw a psychiatrist about it, and he went through the full round, and she pointed out that it was clear that I was the parent that had passed it down because it tends to be genetic. Mm-hmm. And it was important for us to deal with that. It was important for me to be aware that I had ADHD so I could help him, because my ADHD was debilitating towards me. I had never been diagnosed. I'm 49 now.
Interesting.
I was raised at a time that people didn't get diagnosed, and women in particular, young girls, did not get diagnosed.
Linda, your story is so common. I can't even begin to tell you how many times people have come into my office about a child, and an adult your age starts to realize that this is also their story. And I hear this from my colleagues. I recently came back from the International Chad Conference. The Children and Adults with ADHD Conference in St. Louis. And I was privileged to have some conversations with some of the leaders in the field who work with women who discover that they have ADHD later in life. Sari Solden, Michelle Frank, Terry Matlin. All of these women have written wonderful books. Linda Rogley. And your story is one that millions of women have experienced. So it's great that you're actually trying to understand and work with your ADHD as well.
Linda, just a quick question. We got a lot of people, but I'm just curious, how are you doing? How's your son doing?
We're both great. We both take medication for it, and it was truly a life-saving situation. And I always liken it when there's pushback about medicating ADHD. I always say to people, well, would you tell a diabetic not to take their insulin?
So great. That's so great. You know, I tell people, you know, how much is your child suffering? And, you know, but it worked for you, and that you're and he's doing better in school?
Oh, he went from being a CD student his first semester of his freshman year, and now he's almost all A's and B's.
It's
wow.
Made a
huge wow.
Good for you, Linda.
he's not stressed anymore. That, you know, the anxiety that he had all the time over school is completely gone. It's been life-changing.
Well, I appreciate the call, Linda. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead, Sharon.
Linda points out something really important also, which is that when you are treated properly for ADHD, your anxiety will go down. And I see anxiety very often in my office. Now, the studies show that it's 34% of kids with ADHD are anxious, but I see much more of that because of what we were talking about earlier. You know, if you spend your life hearing about how you're messing up or missing the mark, you live with a low level of anxiety. And then when the stakes are higher, such as in high school, and now you're really struggling, your anxiety just goes through the roof.
Do kids diagnosed with ADHD, do they think they're dumb?
Sometimes.
They're not as smart as probably that they are?
Sometimes they do. And there are kids actually who are very bright. We call them twice exceptional kids, kids who are super bright and have ADHD and are struggling. So they're super bright, but they don't remember things very, very well. Or they're super bright and it takes them a longer time to process information. And for these kids, that the significant relative difference that they're experiencing is really frustrating. Mm-hmm. And it can affect their mood. It can increase anxiety. And, of course, it affects self-concept.
Is there a connection between ADHD and learning differences, as
yes,
we call them now?
Learning differences. 70% of kids with ADHD, have learning differences. Mm-hmm. Reading, math, and writing is the most common, because writing uses every single executive functioning skill.
Oh, interesting. So bad handwriting, inability to hold a pen or pencil?
It's not the handwriting. It's writing for school. Writing, whether you're producing sentences for a spelling sheet, whether you're writing a paragraph about your summer vacation, whether you're writing something about a book or a history topic.
How about computer? I mean, is that where computers come in, or
keyboarding?
A keyboard?
Keyboarding can be really helpful, but it also can be problematic. That's why I paused.
And you have a whole chapter about that, which we will get to. Let me get Steve from Gladwin to join us on Radio Times. And Steve, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty. This is a tremendous program.
Thank you.
I have a son who was diagnosed with ADHD in second grade, and we worked on behavioral interventions and medication. Unfortunately, the medication had some really tough side effects, lack of appetite and trouble sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been off medication for a number of years. He's 16 now, and he struggles, but he's very obstinate about any other kind of intervention. We've gone to two or three different psychologists and, you know, tried to get that going, but he's just always been very reticent to go. So I was wondering if your guest has any advice on how to get your child kind of, you know, to be on board with the plan of that.
Well, first I want to tell you
Thanks,
are
Steve.
Not alone. This happens to many, many families. My particular perspective is that what's happening for your son is happening for your whole family. And so that when you can get help from a family perspective, he will have to participate. rather than him going on his own, which I ultimately think is less helpful for kids with ADHD.
They feel like the problem child.
They feel like the problem, and the thing is, even adolescents who may benefit more and use the therapy more effectively individually, they still need family work because they're living in a system where the parents have been their executive functions for a long time, and that happens in all families, but it especially happens in ADHD families because parents are the scaffolding longer than you'd think.
Interesting.
And so the take that I would go for you is to talk about, you know, we want to help you better, and so we're going to go to family therapy to do that.
Steve, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. A Facebook comment here. Any advice for how to handle a kid with inattentive ADD but who has a penchant for hyper-focusing on preferred tasks and avoiding ones that are less than preferred? And that makes perfect sense,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, of course. So many kids are like that. The thing is, I think that what works best is if you can have a conversation about the thing you're struggling with when you're not struggling with it. So I call this to plan and prepare. When you can sit down and say, you know, I noticed that you're really good at focusing on X and not very good at focusing on Y. And that's because Y is uninteresting. When a task is fundamentally uninteresting, perhaps like homework or cleaning out the litter box, people are going to avoid that task. So you have to link that task to something they enjoy doing. That's how we work with motivation. And there are two kinds of motivation: extrinsic, which is outside of us, and intrinsic, which is inside of us. Intrinsic motivation doesn't really kind of gel until the late teens, early 20s. And if you add 3 years for kids with ADHD, you're into your early 20s. So try to work with your son on setting up a plan. You do X, the thing you don't like, for a certain amount of time. You have a break, in which case during your break, you do something you enjoy, which we make a list of, and then you do X again, same thing. And then at the end of the hour, when you've done your work, you've earned Y, which is the big kahuna, something that matters to your child.
And that's where consistency comes in.
Exactly.
Well.
Write it down. Parents, write everything down. Then you don't have to worry about forgetting them.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation again. Clinical psychologist Sharon Saleen is our guest. We're talking about children diagnosed with ADHD, and she's got a book, What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew, and she spent many years working with these children and their families. And you can join us, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Sharon Saleen about children diagnosed with ADHD. I want to read just a couple of sentences from a piece that we found in the New York Times in praise of ADHD by Leonard Mlodinow. He wrote a book called Elastic, Flexible Thinking in a Time of Change. And he said, you know, in this very frenetic world that we all live in now, where we're just bombarded with things all the time, he says certain cognitive tendencies are useful, things like embracing novelty, absorbing a wide variety of information, generating ideas, creativity, that in many ways, if we can rethink ADHD, it might be the perfect thing for the world that we live in, right? That we've created for ourselves.
Right. Well, you know, people with ADHD are amazing. I love working with them because they're creative, they're spontaneous, they're funny, they have really out-of-the-box thinking, ways of looking at the world. And I think we tend to focus on the problems, and I really focus on the challenges and the gifts. I mean, I think that when people with ADHD can reduce their problem thinking and their problems of daily living and reframe them into challenges that they're facing because of how their brain is wired. They just have a different kind of brain. It's not a worse or better brain. I tell kids in my practice, you know, you have a foggy brain. Your mom has a fast brain. I have an anxious brain. You know, everybody has different brains.
Join the club, right?
And so there's no right or wrong. It's just how we choose to live with them and how we can work best with them. And so good treatment with for kids with ADHD and families living with ADHD allows children to blossom, to share the essence of who they are in more appropriate and effective ways.
Is it about performance? I mean, is it a performance issue? And oftentimes, I mean, school is all about performance.
It is. ADHD is a performance-based disorder. It's not an intelligence deficit. Adults with ADHD can't apply what they know at the time when they need to use it. And that has to do with challenges with working memory and processing speed. So it is a performance-based disorder, not a level of intelligence. And I tell that to kids over and over again. You just can't access what you know. You can't bring up what you know when you need to use it.
A question from Donna. Is it too late to help a 19-year-old girl in college who I suspect has ADHD? My daughter was prescribed medication through a neurologist, but she doesn't have a therapist. I think Adderall would be a mistake for her since she does recreational drugs. Is it ever too late to get a diagnosis?
Never. It is never too late. And actually, 19-year-olds, kids who go off to college who haven't been diagnosed are often diagnosed at that time because the structure that they had at home and with high school that was supporting them and holding them together has now fallen away, and they have to provide all of that for themselves.
Oh,
and so there's a pretty good chance that this girl actually would benefit from either therapy that with someone who understands ADHD and can help her cognitively and emotionally, or even an ADHD coach to help her organize her life and be more productive.
Let me see what looks like Missy from Downingtown has to say. And Missy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, Missy.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air. Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Missy. I have a son who's 13 who is recently diagnosed with ADHD, and his father and I had thought for a little while that this that he had a lot of anxiety, he was having problems in school and being focused, and even one of his teachers put him way up in the front of the classroom, and that was actually more distracting to him. So he's been taking Concerta, 18 milligrams, since the beginning of the school year, and I've noticed a great improvement in his grades and his excitement about school.
That's wonderful.
But there have been... Yeah, but we've had two times where he's had this, like, emotional breakdown. Hmm. And we, meaning his father and I, we're not certain if it has to do with the medication or if it's this other maybe piece of anxiety. And the breakdowns, it's more like he's been overstimulated or something throughout the day. And at the end of the day, he's just had it.
So is it so kind of a meltdown?
These happen at the end of the day?
Yeah.
So when kids go to school, they have to spend all day holding it together. And even if you're medicated, you're still working your executive functioning skills very hard, both academically and socially. There are things going on that you're trying to process and retain, conversations, gestures, facial expressions. It's a lot. And so what's happening is, I call this the witching hour. Your son comes home from school. He's basically weaning off his medication because it's leaving his body, and he doesn't have to hold it together. And so it's just fall apart time. It might be worth having a conversation with him. I think it would be, actually, to sit down and say, look, this period is a tough period for you. What could we do to predict that this period is tough? When you come home from school, what kind of break can we give your brain and your body that might help you ease the transition from school and medication to post-school?
And do this, obviously, when he's not having a meltdown, but
yes.
when you can think
Sorry,
clearly.
Sorry, yes. You have to clearly. Have all any of the conversations I've suggested today have to happen when you're not in the middle of an event or a crisis. But just to just acknowledge that this is his pattern, no judgment. Let's see how we can work with it. I had one little boy who would come home from school. This is in my practice, not my own son, but he would come home from school. His medication were off. He was in third grade, and he would start rolling around on the floor. And his mother came in. She was a single mom. She said, I can't deal with this. I have his older sister. We've got to make dinner, and he's rolling around the kitchen floor. So I said, well, I asked the child, why are you rolling around the floor? He said, it's my flippy floppy time. So we just set up a thing where everybody had, the whole family had 5 minutes of flippy floppy time in the living room, yoga, dancing, rolling around. And we added humor to it. And it sort of took the edge off.
We should all have flippy floppy time, I think. Figure out how to work that into our day.
Exactly.
Missy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Something we touched on earlier about the problem of overdiagnosis. Samuel says, is overdiagnosis a problem? Is this becoming a catch-all? I was in a classroom where 13, 15-year-old kids raised their hands and said they had ADHD. I was flabbergasted. 13 out of the 15 saying that they had ADHD.
Wow.
I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it's important to have a correct diagnosis here.
Yes. So I think a lot of kids will say they have ADHD because they think they have ADHD. Mm. I would be surprised if 13 kids in one classroom actually have ADHD. Right. But I think kids say, well, you know, I'm hyper, so I have ADHD, or I have a little ADHD, or that sort of thing. It sounds like in that class it was almost a status.
Yeah, well, and right, which is a whole but other kettle of fish
right,
there.
Exactly.
I'm interested in teenagers, mm-hmm. and you quote a girl named Esme, mm-hmm. And I just want to read what she told you. She said, I've been suspended twice for stirring the pot, whatever that means, and I've had a bunch of detentions. I don't care. The last one was for going after Tiffany and pulling her hair at lunch when she called me a bitch for talking to her ex-boyfriend. I mean, they're not even together anymore. School sucks. I failed bio last semester, and I got D's in everything else. Mm-hmm. Are there special – and obviously this is a frustrated child.
Yes.
They've probably been dealing with failure, frustration, whatever, judgments for many years now. Are there special things you think parents should do when their child is a full throttle teenager?
Well, in this particular instance, Esme had been having trouble in school for years, and her mother had been trying to get her tested by the school psychologist, but wasn't able to navigate the system very well, didn't exactly know, no one was helping her. When she was finally tested, which is, she came to see me, and we had this conversation, and then, you know, I was like, you need to be tested.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be failing. You're smart. Like, she was a smart girl. She was diagnosed in 10th grade with dyslexia and ADHD.
Wow. So imagine those 10 years of struggle for
10 years of struggle for her. And how that struggle manifested was often in acting out behavior.
A question from Bob. Can you discuss the differences between ADHD and autism?
I can, of course. Autism is a very different kind of disorder. ADHD has to do with not being able to access the information that you need at a particular time. It's a persistent condition of hyperactivity, impulsivity, or inattention that you find in two settings, right, with a number of symptoms. Autism is a developmental disorder that has a whole host of other issues that really focus on social relatability or the inability to do so, as well as self-care. High-functioning autistic kids can have ADHD. There is an overlap of that. And what you see in those children is that for them, the social challenges are greater.
Right.
In general, kids with ADHD do struggle socially because they often miss cues, social cues. I mean facial cues or words in conversation. If you're at the lunch table in high school and you have ADHD, it's really hard to hear what's going on.
Because there's just so much commotion around you,
and there's so many distractions, and it's hard to focus.
You wrote, and I thought this was interesting, ADHD kids have a strong sense of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Probably injustice too, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I think because they've heard for so long about what they're not doing right, that they have a strong sense of what they think is right. Like they want to basically be able to assert their point of view and have someone listen. And so they can be sometimes combative and aggressive in asserting themselves and need to understand the effects of their behavior. That's a little hard for kids with ADHD. It's again, it's about that social understanding.
We mentioned computers before, and you have a whole chapter about phones.
Technology.
Yep. I mean, I think we are all dealing with
right,
this.
Right, so exactly.
Guilty as charged here. But is there something special that parents should think about or kids should think about if they have ADHD?
Well, one of the things that I hear from parents is they can't get their kids off the technology. And so, again, speaks to planful conversation. So if your child has trouble getting off technology, you need to set up a plan with them about what would help them get off technology and what is the incentive that they're going to get. One family I work with, they each had 30 minutes of computer time. And if they got off the computer time without yelling or having a meltdown, they could have 15 minutes of phone time or they could watch a show with a parent. They could choose. If they got off the computer with a meltdown, they lost their TV and phone time for that day. And the interesting thing was you'd think, oh, well, they'd say, who cares? I just want more computer time. That wasn't the case. They wanted that bonus. And I think that's important for parents to think about.
Let me get Karen. Karen calling us from Glenside. And Karen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi there, Karen.
Hi. I have a daughter who is 17. She's extremely bright. She was identified as gifted in second grade. She's always been perfectionistic, taking excruciatingly long to do anything. She was able to focus really well on tasks that she enjoyed, but she's always had sort of OCD rituals, procrastination. And then as she got to the end of middle school, she could not finish her testing, like PSSAs. She just would sit there. She couldn't hand it in. So she was diagnosed with OCD and anxiety. We've been working with someone to do CBT for like about 2 years and then tried her on some SSRIs, and they don't seem to be helping. She's now got depression in addition to her anxiety and panic attacks.
Oh, dear.
And it seems like... the inability to concentrate and focus seems to be the biggest thing that is bothering her right now. She also has migraines. So
has she been evaluated for ADHD?
I don't think so. We did. I think her therapist did a long form evaluation for that a couple of years ago, and she
doesn't
have it. But
I'm looking at Sharon's face, and she's shaking her head, Karen.
I would suggest that you get the school district to give her a full psychological evaluation. We need to understand how her brain is working. We need to understand her thinking, her intelligence, and what's getting in the way. And right now, all of it's been about her emotional functioning or lack thereof. And I want to understand a little bit more about what's happening in her brain. And I think that would give you a little bit more of a map of for solutions.
Yeah. And Karen, unfortunately, we can't really deal with this in a complete way on the radio. But as you said, she's getting CBT. So perhaps even that therapist can help navigate some
exactly.
of this stuff. Sharon, we're almost out of time here. But this book is about children, the grown-up person with ADHD.
They can actually read this book and it will help
them. They can grow into their brain, if you know what I mean.
Well, actually, kids do all grow into their brain. I know it's hard for you to see when you're in the thick of parenting, but what's remarkable, and I offer some of these stories at the very end of the book, is that kids find their way. And they find their way in areas that you wouldn't expect. And they feel proud of themselves when they get there, and they're making it. You know, they may take them 6 years to get through college, two classes per semester at a time. They may need to work at Subway for a while and then go decide to be trained as a hairdresser. They make it, and that's what I really want to remind parents: stay in there.
Sharon Saleen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me, Marty. It was a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And she's a clinical psychologist, author of What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.